Okay, everybody. It's 8 a.m. in L.A., it's 5 p.m. in Berlin, and it's time for the Squirrel News Podcast. This is the show that brings you news about solutions all over the world. It's all about solutions journalism. If I could say it, I could do it. I'm Ed Krasnick, a Jew in L.A. My partner is Jonathan Vitter, a German in Berlin. It's the only show where a Jew and a German come together to solve the world's problems. The only show. You'll never hear this. You'll never see it. This is the show that does it. Squirrel News is a constructive app, a constructive news app that curates solutions journalism news stories from around the globe. You can find it for Android and iPhones everywhere, and you go to squirrel-news.net, squirrel-news.net. This is a good show. I'm excited about this one because sometimes we know the people that come on, sometimes we don't. In this case, I do know this man, and I'm excited to be talking to him. On today's show, CEO and founder of Utes.org, a youth transportation organization delivering opportunities for all kinds of people. Craig Flax is on the show today. I don't know why I'm talking like Captain Kangaroo, but I'm excited. Right now, it's time to meet my partner, the founder of Squirrel News. Problems fear him. He is the James Brown of solutions because he's the hardest working man in the solutions business, Jonathan Vitter. Jonathan, how does it feel to be the godfather of solutions?
Good question. We have to assume that you're right in the first place, and then the godfather and James Brown of solutions at the same time. Well,
I bet you feel good like James Brown.
It must feel good. It must feel good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm excited. This is something that this company and our guest, somebody I shared with you, and then you wrote me back something that was very, excited about it. What to you would make this a Squirrel News story? I'm sure you would pick this story if you read about it.
Yeah, it would be a classic, classical story. The problem is well defined, right? You sent me this blog article, which was in fact a very comprehensive, in-depth, professional blog article, not like some others. And problem is very well defined. The solution is quite clearly described, and it's also a problem and a solution we don't hear about every day. So it's really new. It's not just news, but it's also something new. Sometimes news and politics are pretty repetitive, right? But in this case, it seems to be a pretty new approach and a successful working approach. So it fulfills all criteria for a Squirrel News story.
Yeah, it's always good when you get when you get a great story that's something that you really don't think about, you never thought about, something that you take for granted, and something that can change the world. I like those combinations, and that's what I feel when I think about this. So let's bring on our guest without any further ado, if you'll pardon my French. And now we'll have the founder. This is the CEO. This is the founder of Utes.org, as I told you. All around transportation changing people's lives. He's also a filmmaker and a producer, and his family owned a store in San Francisco that was the most popular. I would go there, the most amazing place, an art store that everybody went to. And his name is Craig Flax. And Craig, we haven't talked for a while, but it's really nice to be talking to you now.
Hey, Ed. Thanks so much for inviting me along. And Jonathan, it's really nice to meet you. I'm excited to talk about Utes with you guys. And also want to wish you, Ed, a happy new year.
Oh, thank you. Shana Toba. Yes, happy new year. It's 5783, even though I'm writing 5782 on all my checks. it still is 50. Yeah, it's a new year. I had an amazing ceremony on the beach last night with a rabbi, which I won't talk about now, but I'll tell you about it another time. This really is one of those great inspiring stories that's helping people, and it all revolves around transportation. Tell us a little bit about how this idea came to you and what it's about and how this all works.
Well, it's a bit of a long story, and I'll tell you, the serendipity around it is really, truly incredible. It's one of those stories that, to me, explains that the universe really does sort of make things happen for you. So for decades, I worked at my family's art store as a marketing guy, and please don't hold that against me.
Not at all.
I appreciate that. But our photographer, a guy named Tom Sewell, who is a very close friend of mine, he had started making a movie about this legendary rock climber named Tom Frost. And Tom, for those of you who don't know, which is probably literally anyone listening to this, Tom co-founded Patagonia with Yvon Chouinard. And the route that Alex Honnold climbs in the movie Free Solo was first put up by Tom Frost in 1960 in Yosemite Valley. So while working on this film, it's a very big deal in the rock climbing world to have mentors, right? A lot of kids these days get started in the gym. They're climbing on plastic and they're doing incredibly hard routes in a very safe and controlled environment. And then they get out to the big walls of Yosemite, and not to get too deep into the weeds with how routes the level of difficulty of routes have a scoring system. And in a gym, you might find a 12-year-old climbing, you know, a 5.10 or a 5.12 route. And then they get out to Yosemite and a 5.8 route is extraordinarily difficult for them because, hey, it's hard rock and there are consequences to your falls. So part of the way that we've told the story of the film is through mentoring. And there was a kid. He is now an adult, but he was at the time a 16-year-old named Kai Leitner, an African-American from North Carolina, was already a 10-time U.S. champion in climbing indoors and a one-time world champion, and he had never climbed outdoors. And so we took him on his very first outdoor climb in North Carolina, and on the car ride from his house to the park where the rocks were, which is about a 3-hour car ride, we got to know Kai's mom, Connie. And Connie is a PhD who works at University of North Carolina. Connie grew up on welfare in Cleveland. And while we're driving to the crag, we started talking about why Kai had never climbed outdoors and how typically there aren't a lot of people who look like Kai outdoors. And we talked about this Obama era program, which still exists, called Every Kid in a Park. Every Kid in a Park in the United States allows fourth graders and their families to enter national parks for free. And Connie basically ripped this program to shreds, saying, who cares if you can get into the park for free? When you live in the hood, your life is 8 blocks by 8 blocks and you're not going anywhere. Very few people own cars. If you own a car, spending money on gas for something like driving to a national park isn't something that happens. Taking public transit to a national park is a joke. And it was that conversation that really sparked something in me. I think, you know, I knew this logically, that transportation was an issue for a lot of folks. But this conversation is really what hit home. And so I came home from that weekend and started to talk to a bunch of friends I had in the nonprofit space here in the San Francisco Bay Area. I talked to a former executive director from Outward Bound who told me, yeah, you know, we'd give these $4,000 scholarships for a 3-week program in the outdoors. And all somebody had to do was show up to the parking lot where the bus was, and they weren't coming. And I spoke to an executive director of an arts program in downtown Oakland, California, and asked if transportation was a problem. And even there, where they're in the middle of a city center, she said transportation was by far the largest barrier to getting low-income kids to their programming. And so here I was, you know, a 55-year-old guy with no experience in the nonprofit space and no experience in the transportation space. And I said to myself, I'm going to start a nonprofit that that solves a transportation problem.
That is a heck of a story and a heck of a good movie. And we're making the movie right now and it's streaming. Because that is a great movie. That's a great story. Amazing story. And it brings up so many points, you know, that we have an economic pandemic that's been going on for a long time. And really, how many times, you know, anybody living in an urban area, what's the percentage of people that get out there? And what is the percentage that never get out there because of economics? So, and how does it change your life? How does it change the perspective of these kids? The other thing is, you're talking about a national park, but there's also other uses for Utes.org. There's other groups that it helps.
Certainly, yeah. We started, actually, even though I kind of came at this from an outdoor perspective, the very first kind of rides that we gave, and to back up just a little, what Utes does is we find transportation solutions for low-income youth. And that can really be anything from rides for a single kid, to a family, all the way up to field trips for literally hundreds of kids at Title I schools. And a Title I school here in America is defined by at least 40% of the student population qualifies for the free and reduced lunch program. And in the Bay Area, the number of Title I schools is around 50% of all schools, which is a number that shocked me when I first heard it.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, our mission is really broad, and it's almost one of those, we're never... You know, if the problem ever goes away and Utes gets to go away because the problem has been solved, that's terrific. But it feels like an awfully big mountain. But yeah, we started by literally giving rides to kids to UCSF Benioff Children's Hospital in Oakland, because the no-show rate for kids going to their doctor's appointments was over 40%, and and so we had a partnership with Lyft, and we were getting kids from as far away as Stockton, and which is, you know, roughly 90 miles away from the hospital, and getting kids to, you know, life-saving doctor appointments. So that was really how we started, and we grew from there. The folks at Genentech were kind enough to start donating their employee shuttles to us. So we were able to utilize those shuttles for field trips, not so much for schools, but for youth serving organizations. And they continue to do that. Genentech has been a really wonderful partner of ours. My goal throughout all of this, because I do come from a sort of a sustainability background, was to utilize as much excess capacity in the transportation space as possible. And there are an awful lot of tech companies using an awful lot of buses to get their employees to and from work. But they don't have a lot of use for those vehicles on the weekends. So I've been banging my head against the tech wall for a few years now. And kind of to come back to your point, we offer transportation for field trips for schools, for outings, for community groups, for youth serving organizations. We help young adults get to their first job interviews And once they get the job, we'll help them get to that job for a period of time until they are able to afford to pay for their own transportation to their jobs. So it's a really all-encompassing kind of organization. The really big numbers come from field trips. But I find that, you know, it's when I get a kid from Stockton to Oakland for their dialysis appointment that really moves me. That said, these field trips are life-changing. You know, there are a lot of kids in San Francisco who grew up in San Francisco, a city on the ocean, that have never been to the ocean. And we'll get those kids out to the ocean for the very first time. They'll go surfing for the very first time with some of our partners. It's truly life-changing. Somebody's quote, and I don't think it's theirs originally, but basically what they said is you can't be what you can't see. And I think that Utes creates those opportunities for these kids to see what's possible. And then we do everything in our power to allow them to find a way to get back to the thing that sparked their passion so that it can become something that they're able to follow up with.
How has this changed your life and what you think about and the way you think about things, the way you think about problem solving, the way you think about getting from point A to point B, the way you think about, you know, climbing mountains and problem solving? Because this is a solution that I'm going to guess this model can be used all over the world.
Yeah. It's interesting. The folks at Apple actually asked me if I could take this beyond the Bay Area. And the answer is, yeah, sure. Of course I can. And it's just a matter of money. And then it's a matter of understanding any particular municipality, right? I mean, if you're in New York, you have a really wonderful subway system that solves a lot of the problems that a place like the Bay Area or LA really, you know, couldn't begin to solve. Or actually, you know, LA did have it solved, you know, back in what, the 20s?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. And then they threw it away.
They threw it away.
And so sure, there are solutions everywhere, but everywhere is unique. And so it's certainly not, it's not something that, if somebody said to Craig, hey, you know, please come help us out in Chicago, that I could just snap my fingers and Chicago is solved. And the same with rural areas, right? Rural areas are really difficult because the space between somebody's home and the place that they're trying to gather and then the place that they're trying to get to, there's considerable distance. So so every kind of town, every community has their own subset of transportation issues that that are very complicated.
Well, I think that if you live in a neighborhood where you're trying to survive all the time, you don't think about what's outside your neighborhood. And so that's why poorer families, they're busy surviving.
Well, that's
where they are.
Yeah, no, that's exactly true. And if you look at the historical United States real estate and planning, it's extraordinarily racist. And it's, you know, how many parks do you see in urban areas near where a lot of the low-income populations live? It's an incredibly small number of safe, easily accessible parks that people can go to.
Yeah, well, that would be a program. I mean, just right off the bat, I would think just getting people to different neighborhoods so they can connect with a diverse population.
Yep.
Is, you know, this is the melting pot of America, right? This is supposed to be a melting pot. I don't think there's any melting. I don't think there's a lot of melting. There's a lot of talk about it, and the idea is a good one. But it really is not when you come down to it.
Yeah, and it's very complicated and expensive. And, it's a problem that we created for ourselves, and trying to find a way out of it is being left to folks like me, right? And God help us. that said, you know, it's a pretty recognizable issue. I think that folks are starting to come around and understand that that by burdening a large part of your population with the inability to imagine and become inspired doesn't help the economy, right? It doesn't help the community as a whole. So people are beginning to sort of open their eyes to that. And the question just becomes, you know, how do we help these communities get the access that is so desperately needed? And not just get the access for a one-time field trip, right? It's nice to go on a field trip, but one thing that I've learned is that a lot of the kids that will go on a field trip, they won't open themselves up to the experience because they already know they can't experience it again, right? If you don't want to fall in love with surfing if this is the only time you're ever going to be allowed to go surfing. And so it's not just that initial spark of, wow, I saw it and now I'm so excited. It's the, how can I get back there whenever the heck I darn well please, and start to really allow myself to dream and then find a way to do something with my dreams, you know, which is what I was very fortunate. I grew up in a situation where I didn't have, you know, those questions. If I saw something that I wanted to go after, I was fortunate enough to be able to go after it. And so when you grow up like that, even if you have friends that are in a different situation than you, while you're growing up, it's harder to see. I mean, it's, you know, I'm speaking for myself, of course, but, I had plenty of friends who didn't come from families that were well off or maybe even comfortable, but I don't think I truly understood the situation until, you know, here I am an adult.
Well, you can get there from here. That's going to be the tagline. You can get there from here with a program like this. And I don't know if we can get this to Tim Cook or anybody. I'm sure you know people at Apple, but this is, to me, this is something that Apple funds, and they just do this. I know it sounds easy. It sounds simple. I know it's very complex, but I can't imagine how a company that prides itself on innovation and imagination, you know, wouldn't be a partner, a big partner in this.
Yeah, I have spoken with the head of their educational giving, and he asked all the right questions. We spent a good hour talking about it. He was very excited, you know. But a few weeks later, it was just like, "Hey, Craig, we can't take on another partner right now." And you know, I think that those kinds of choices that corporations make are, you know, they're both understandable and disappointing, right?
Because this is a basic thing. This is really, transportation is really basic. We do take it for granted, and that's why nobody thinks about it.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think, you know, look, I don't want to single out Apple. I will tell you that I think along the way, they're probably going to be a partner of ours. It's just some of these things take time. We also have a program. We've partnered with BART. BART is Bay Area Rapid Transit, which is sort of our subway system. It's not quite like a New York system or a Chicago L or Paris Metro or London Underground. It doesn't get you from block to block, but it does sort of help with vast distances. And our partnership was signed 2 weeks before the first shelter in place back in March of 2020. But we got it going in this past school year. And basically, this partnership allows for Title I school students completely free rides on BART to go to any field trip that they want to go on. And Google gave us some money. The Golden State Warriors gave us some money. The Packard Foundation gave us some money to get it started. We had a wonderful first year. And I thought, hey, this is such a great opportunity for Amazon, who had just come in to the San Francisco Bay Area last year. not only because of the philanthropic opportunity, but because my partnership is with BART, we get a lot of signage, right? We get signage in the stations and on the cars. And if anybody would appreciate signage and telling the world that they're doing wonderful things, you would think it would be Amazon. And again, after months of conversations, we ended up not getting funded this year. And, you know, this is very, by the way, I'm breaking every rule of a nonprofit by calling people out on this, but
yes, that's it. The bridges are up. No, they're not.
Well, no, I'm not. No, it's, you know, look, I would welcome partnerships, and I do recognize that there are many, many, many very wonderful causes out there, and the people on the philanthropic teams get overwhelmed with requests, which is part of the issue with our whole system, right? It's like we have to rely on philanthropy to get some stuff that is, you know, really basic stuff like, you know, food or water or transportation. That we have to rely on these extraordinarily successful companies to help fund getting them done. But we do.
We do. So, yeah. So the other guy, that there's so many places, and I'm sure you've being a marketing director, especially coming up in that, you know, everybody, but it's bridge building. And I wonder if there are companies that build bridges. I wonder if it's something literal like that or Edutopia, George Lucas's foundation. I mean, that to me, you know, but there's so many, there's a lot. That's the thing about this is there's a lot of companies that are doing good who are connected to, very wealthy people or foundations, but finding them out and finding out how to navigate it and how to transport yourself to the funding is really, you know, can be really challenging. But I want to bring in Jonathan, who's been listening patiently for a bit here. Jonathan, what are you thinking about as you hear this?
So I just said the European perspective, right? The state has to do it. And I was wondering, so if there was a state solution, what would it look like from your perspective? Could the government really do everything you do? Because it seems like you're doing some things the government couldn't provide, but there are other things the government should provide probably.
Yeah, Jonathan, without a doubt. I mean, so for instance, there are, I don't even know how many different transit authorities are in this region, but there are a lot, right? And there is one sort of, it's not a governing body, but it's a body that they all belong to called Metropolitan Transportation Commission, I think. And so they sort of oversee all of these different transportation authorities within the Bay Area. And it's herding cats, right? You've got these organizations like San Francisco MTA. They do give free rides to youth on their transportation system. Just hop on. You don't have to prove anything. You don't have to have a piece of paper. You just do it. Whereas AC Transit doesn't. And then Golden Gate Transit, not even close. I mean, it's expensive to get on those buses. So do we have the ability to, like, literally tomorrow just say, sure, everybody get on the transit system for free? Of course we do. That doesn't solve all the problems because the transportation systems don't always get you from point A to point B without it being really complicated. And I'm glad you brought it up because, you know, time is very expensive, right? And when you think about it, the kids who will take public transit either to and from school, or if they have an after school program, go to the after school program. And what would take a family who is well off 10 to 15 minutes to pick up their child and bring them to whatever the after school opportunity is, and then back home again. If you do that on public transit here in the Bay Area, a 15-minute car ride could lead to a 45-minute public transit ride, right? And if you've got a 45-minute ride from school to the program, and then another 45 minutes from the program home, that's an hour and a half. And that's an hour and a half that another student is studying or having dinner with their family or playing with their friends. And so, could the government do it? Yes. Would it be crazy heavy lifting? Absolutely. But it could and should be done. And it's the kind of thing that the government should be thinking about. And I think that they do. You know, I've had conversations with different organizations within the government, but they really, from what I've seen, they really get hamstrung by having to solve not just for X, but for A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, all at the same time. And that, I think, is where the problem really lies, is it's really tough to solve everybody's problem. Period. So I'm just focusing on youth because I can't solve everybody's problem.
Yeah. So free public transport would absolutely be good, but it wouldn't solve everything. To do more to solve everything, you also founded a platform for teachers, right? To organize field trips kind of together to make it easier.
Yeah. One of the most complicated things, teachers' lives are so complicated as they are, but literally just trying to get students out on a field trip it takes a lot of heavy lifting, and the teachers that do it are fully committed to their kids and to their curriculum. It's pretty exciting to see. And so when we designed our program, our field trip programs, our first priority after the pricing, which we try to make free, was how do we do this so that the educators don't have to spend any extra time doing it? And we think, at least at this point, we have a pretty good platform for educating teachers about where they can go, where field trips will match the curriculum that they want to provide their students. And then we just make the request process super simple. And currently we don't turn people down. But that's a money thing too, right? We're going to run out of money, and we need to raise more money, and we always are going to need to raise more money. The goal is to make it super simple for educators so that they continue their excitement for wanting to get the kids out.
And you provide the buses?
We provide buses. So some of our programs, we provide buses for free. Other programs, we provide buses where we cap the cost at $500 per trip. To give you an idea of a school bus these days for a field trip in the middle of a day, that's a pretty short field trip, will cost about $800. But anything that veers off of the I leave at 9 and I'm back by 2 schedule tends to cost anywhere between $1,000 and $1,500. And then if you're going overnight, then you're talking about $2,000 to $2,200. And that's per bus. So I'm doing field trips this year that have 150 students, and 150 students needs 3 buses. So all of a sudden you're talking about, $6,000-$8,000 for one field trip. It's pretty pricey.
Wow, this is fantastic. We have a lot more to go here on this program. I'm really excited about what you're doing. And how did you deal? Unless we've talked about this before, but how did you deal with the pandemic, and how are you rebuilding the program?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Obviously, during the pandemic, there wasn't a lot of enthusiasm for funding a field trip program, right? It was, how do we make sure that people stay alive? And understandably so. We spent that time literally building out our capabilities. Salesforce has been an amazing partner. Salesforce donates their platform to nonprofits here in the US. And that allowed us to create a very powerful website. And I was talking about making it easy for the teachers. Our website is integrated with our Salesforce platform. And we, that was the kind of work that is pretty hard while you're in the in the weeds, you know, of operations. So we took the time during the pandemic to build out that, to create some very strong relationships. The BART program, you know, we found money during the pandemic so that when the pandemic sort of, you know, when things started to open up, we would have some money to get going on that program. So it was very difficult, you know, personally. I couldn't pay myself during that period of time. And I do not, you know, I'm not independently wealthy. I do need to pay myself. But it also did give us the opportunity to really understand how we could affect change in the space and create some strong partnerships. And I am I'm pretty excited about the partnerships that we have. Although there are certainly, there's always room for bringing on new partners, especially on the financial side. I'll give you an example. There's a science museum called the Exploratorium here in the Bay Area. And we were giving, while we were giving rides during our pilot program this past school year with the BART program, the Exploratorium was closed because of COVID. But as soon as they opened and they saw what we were doing, they came to us and they are giving out free admission to students from Title I schools this school year. And they asked us to provide 80,000 rides to their museum this school year alone. Which is expensive, but it's also, it shows that even the most iconic of Bay Area field trip venues know what we're doing and see the value in what we're doing. And we've created partnerships like that with Girl Scouts, Oakland Zoo, other science centers, Asian Art Museum, you know, arts centers. It's been a very exciting time, and I don't know how well I would have been able to do that without a little bit of downtime prior to the world reopening. So it was horrible, but it was also beneficial.
Yeah, well, this is wow, amazing. I've still got the film in my head. I want to hear more about that, because that is exciting too. But we're going to wrap up this portion, but we're going to have you back. You have to come back, and we have to talk further about this, and we have to promote this around the world. I think one of the things that we're getting into, you can't do this, but we will, is shout outs to companies who are helping efforts like this and highlighting them and applauding them. And I can do this, you can't, because you have a nonprofit, but basically talking about the companies who are saying no. I think I want to start a list of those companies. Now look, I'm not kidding about that, because yeah. I think people need to know you know, who the heroes are. And there are a lot of great organizations who are doing it, and there are a lot of factors, but that's just something that I'm going to do. That'll be a separate podcast for me. Listen, we can't thank you enough. It's a pleasure to talk to you again, and we're going to talk again very soon, because we have a lot to catch up on. But where do they go to help you? Where do they go to help out and to find out more about the program?
Thanks, Ed. And I do want to say thank you for giving me the opportunity in this space to share our story. It's always fun to be able to do that, and obviously catching up with you and meeting Jonathan. And so I wanted to thank you before I say any of that.
Sure. Pleasure.
Our website is youtes.org. That's youots.org. And yes, youtes, I call youtes my dyslexic acronym for Youth Transportation Organization, but it also is a word that comes straight out of Joe Pesci's mouth from my cousin Vinny. If anybody was wondering why Utes. So there's that. And then my email is Craig, C-R-A-I-G, at utes.org. If anybody has any questions or leads for financing, that's how you reach me.
Hey, one last question from my side. You were talking about the kids who lived in San Francisco but had never seen the ocean. And when they went there, they were still not really able to enjoy it because they knew they could maybe not ever do it again. Have you been able to do some of these trips to organize them regularly for the kids? And how did they react then afterwards? Or in general, how do they react when they go there to national parks, zoos, and so on, ocean?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we're still working on getting people back really consistently. We can definitely do it. They can do that through community groups and through organizations that we partner with. But we're trying to, we have a beta program that we're talking to Lyft about, that will allow people on their own, to get back out. As of now, it's more of a group thing. But in 2023, we're up for a couple of large grants from the state where we will actually purchase an e-fleet of vehicles. And I think we're going to look to have that fleet available both for rental from other organizations as well as individual families, and then even act like a shuttle service where we can pick up from certain neighborhoods and bring places. So you know, we're just getting started, and there's a lot of low hanging fruit for us to pick up. And so we're just getting started, I think, is really the answer to your question.
Well, that is our show for this week. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Jonathan Vitter, my partner and the founder of Squirrel News. Go to squirrel-news.net to get all of these stories, these amazing stories, and the amazing people who are creating change and making solutions around the world. And our thanks again to Craig Flax from utes.org. And incredible work, great work. Find us, find the Squirrel News app wherever you get your apps, and find the show, which you can find on the app, or you can find wherever you get your podcasts. So like us, write reviews if you like the show, and keep looking for the good. I'm Ed Krasnick for Jonathan Vitter. We'll see you next time.